Good morning, everyone. Welcome. It is Thursday. It's FPC Radio Live. May 18th. Eastern Conference Finals, Game 1 in the books. Miami Heat. 51%, John. 51% from 3. Honestly, that kind of gives me a little bit of encouragement going into Game 2 for the Celtics. You know, I don't think anyone is shocked that the Celtics dropped. I don't think anyone expected the series to be a sweep, and if they did, they're kind of ridiculous to think so, but very predictable that they'd eventually potentially at this point obviously split at home. I expect them to rebound and come back out pretty strong on Friday in game two, but what happened last night, John? Because they looked good early on. They looked like they were going to come out strong, and then that third quarter was just a disaster. 46 points by the Heat. And this is, and John, this is not a great, this is not the Golden State Warriors of last year where it's like, okay, they put up 46 and a quarter. What the hell are you going to do? Well, the Heat played like the Golden State Warriors. They're just not that team offensively, generally.
No, not usually, although they've had their moments against Milwaukee. They had a few against the Knicks. The Knicks really slowed the game down quite a bit, so that's why you saw some lower scores there. Yeah, the Celtics looked to be in control in the first half, played really well, and then they get outscored, like you said, 46-25 in the third quarter. And somewhere in that 12-minute frame, Joe Mazzulla decided not to use a single timeout. Normally, when you're giving up 46 points in a quarter, you call at least one, maybe two timeouts, regroup, make some changes, give your team a chance to maybe adjust, catch your breath. He just let them play it out, and from that point forward, Miami was in control in the fourth quarter. Celtics had a couple of runs there, but again, and after the game, he said, you know, we were prepared, and making it sound like you won three out of four quarters. Well, that gets you nothing, especially when you get dominated for one quarter.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I mean, maybe not the fourth quarter. I mean, they started strong in the fourth quarter. You thought, okay, all right, you come out. What was it, 7-0 run right off the bat? But it doesn't.
What did Eric Spoelstra do after that?
Yeah, 7-0 run? That's true. I mean, I know it's obviously a very hot topic, you know, and it really has been all season and kind of all playoff too. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's just timeout or not, you can't give up 46 points in the third quarter. You just can't. You can't play soft on Jimmy Butler early in the game. You can't let guys like Martin hit threes. You know, what? How many did he hit? Five? Four? Something like that?
It was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just crazy. Just every, guys that were, undrafted free agents that make up about half of the Miami Heat, and well, they overperform.
Well, and look, and that's, if you're looking for something positive, obviously, from a Celtics point of view, there it is right there. They did overperform, and like I said to start the show, 51% from three. If you're the Heat, you can't expect that. And I don't know. I don't want to sit here and just like pretend like the loss wasn't concerning. I mean, it's always concerning when you lose a playoff game because it makes you one game closer to being eliminated. But I'm not terribly concerned. I think this is just who this look. The Celtics are going to have nights where they're confused. I mean, that's the most remarkable thing about this team, John, is they're the most like Jekyll and Hyde team, mostly good, but then it's just sometimes it's head scratching. And you can, I don't know, like Jason Tatum had a decent stat line, but some terrible turnovers, a couple bad travel. I mean, these are things that you do in pickup games when you think you're a basketball star, but in reality, you're just playing in a pickup game and you accidentally travel because, well, you don't really know what you're doing. Still had a pretty solid stat line. It was very quiet. I remember thinking at one point when he had, I think it was 28 points, I was like, this is a very quiet 28 points. And I think the biggest thing, more so than not taking the timeout, more so than, you know, everything else, he only had, what, two shots halfway through the fourth quarter in the second half? Or what, three shots, yeah, something like that? Like, I understand that, like, you know, down the stretch, like, for those pining for Jason Tatum to have the ball and then he immediately turns it over, I'm not going to pretend like that would have happened if he wasn't engaged in the game the entire time. And that to me was the most puzzling thing because he's, you know, Jaylen Brown was great last night. I think we all watched our lives flash before our eyes. when both Jaylen Brown and Robert Williams were on the ground, writhing in pain. Like, that was like, oh my God, we just lost, well, pretty much their two best players that night, but arguably their a few of their best players. It looked like it was gone, and at that point, John, that's over. They're not winning a championship if both those guys are down. Regardless of how good they played, you need to keep Jason Tatum involved. And look, he may go out there and shoot as poorly as he did in the first half of Game 6 against Philadelphia last series. But he could also go out there and run the offense. And it just felt like, and they were talking about, the only time I actually agreed with the commentary, he was just a passenger, kind of. He was just floating, running screens, that type of thing. And it was, I don't know. You need to get him more involved. And certainly in a game that started to get out of control, it was just very odd that he wasn't a more focal point of the offense.
He took 4 shots in the third quarter, 0 shots in the fourth quarter, and 3 straight turnovers on consecutive possessions, right? So I think by the time he got the ball late in the game, he was looking at it like, what the hell is this foreign object in my hand?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it much for the last 24 minutes. Now, is that him not demanding the ball? Is that them not running plays for him? Is it his teammates?
Well, he never really took the ball up the court. I mean, that's the thing. It's like he never really was involved. It's not like he took it up, passed it off, and then played passively. It was what, Marcus Smart and basically Jaylen Brown bringing the ball up?
Yeah. Yeah, this is what happens with the Celtics a lot. Again, this is a team that won 57 games, still the favorite to win the championship, all of that, but they do have quite a bit of warts. And one of those things is, at times, they become so iso-centric on offense that it's a two-man game, and the other three guys just kind of stand around. When they're really at their best, you know, everybody's touching the ball. There's a lot of catch and pass, or catch and drive and then pass. So, you know, you need more of that with more ball movement. When they do that, they're going to get a lot of wide-open threes because they've got guys that can break down the defense, whether it's Brown, Tatum. Malcolm Brogdon's really good at that as well. And then you spot up your three-point shooters, and that's what you saw, you know, more of on Sunday against the 76ers, although it was Tatum who was, you know, leading the way for the entire game. But when they're at their best, there's a lot of ball movement. Again, a lot of stagnant offense last night. And then on the defensive end, they just couldn't stop Miami. I mean, I don't know how any team scores 46 points in a quarter. And that's essentially 4 points a minute. That's insane.
Well, look, I mean, they hit, what, 3 straight threes to end that quarter? I mean, it was just a barrage of threes. That every shot, they didn't turn the ball over, John. That's almost more remarkable than the 46 points, was the fact that they didn't turn the ball over on their, 35-13 run or something, whatever it was. They did not turn the ball over a single time. And look, again, as frustrating as that is to have watched in game one, luckily it wasn't game seven. And you got to look at it, if you're the Celtics, and say, all right, they're not going to go turnover free and hit over 50% from three the rest of the series. How do we fix the other problems? Like, don't count on, like, I wouldn't count on that, just because, I mean, that's a hard thing to sustain for even really good teams, let alone a Heat team that's, you know, I would say, here I am saying they're limited offensively, and I don't mean it that way. You know what I mean, John. That's just not the type of team they normally are. So I wouldn't necessarily worry about that happening again, but it still doesn't mean that the Celtics should feel 100% fine going into game two. They gotta figure some things out and not fall, because this is a team that's not going to give the series away. This isn't Philadelphia. You've said it multiple times. Philadelphia kind of laid down in game seven, and you never really feel terrible with them having a lead. If you go down 2-0 to Miami, that's going to seem like a very, very impossible hole to dig yourself out of.
Yeah, I mean, they're just mentally tougher, physically tougher than Philadelphia. Their best player never backs down. Obviously, I think they have the best coach in basketball, and Eric Spoelstra. And we keep hearing about Heat culture. They're almost built like a football team, right? You know, you have like this really strong president of basketball operations, and Pat Riley, you know, compare him to Bill Parcells or Bill Belichick. He really sets the tone. And then you've got this brilliant coach in Eric Spoelstra. And then it really helps that your best player buys into it, because that's all he talks about, right? I mean, even after the game last night, Jimmy Butler's talking about Heat culture, and Coach Spo really sets the tone. And he calls Pat Riley Coach Pat. You know, so there's this whole thing. And you know what? Maybe it's just a bunch of garbage. But if everybody's buying into it, and They're up 1-0 in Eastern Conference Finals, and they've already eliminated the one seed in Milwaukee, and they're going to battle the Celtics. We all agree on that. Well, this whole thing does work in Miami.
Yeah, oh, sure, absolutely. And look, I mean, you can't argue against results. This isn't, they're not looked at like the Spurs or anything like that, because look, the Spurs actually won championships, and I understand they went back-to-back, but that was over 10 years ago. So, like, current Heat culture is great and all, but it, you know, again, at the same time, it hasn't produced a championship in this current iteration of it. Let's put it that way. They're classic overachievers, and everyone loves an overachiever. That's why Jimmy Butler, does any announcer not fawn over Jimmy Butler?
Yeah, they do. They do like him. I think part of the reason they like the guy is he kind of carries himself differently than a lot of the
superstars
in the league. They're all friends with each other, and you kind of get the feeling that Jimmy Butler doesn't like the opponents, which is kind of refreshing.
But yeah,
game is also much more old school. Like, he's not dependent on three-pointers. He takes the ball to the basket. He's got a mid-range game. He's kind of a unique player in today's NBA. Like, 25, 30 years ago, that's where his game would have fit in probably better. Or more common. So, yeah, they do like the guy. And, again, he's their star, although, you know, Bam Adebayo is an all-star as well. And Kyle Lowry, who's very, very old, is a multiple-time all-star and an NBA champion. So, you know, they've got some players there. It's just stunning to see how many players they have that play prominent roles that weren't even drafted. You know, you just don't see that in the NBA. This isn't the NFL where, you know, 20% of your roster's seventh-round picks and undrafted free agents. In fact, the greatest player in the history of the sport was a sixth-round pick. In basketball, it's usually those top guys are the guys that determine games, guys that were drafted first, second, or third.
Well, speaking of greatest in anything, we got the greatest voice of hockey. Oh, okay, now we realized he was on camera here. The greatest voice of hockey that full press coverage could possibly ask for, and that's Mr. Jim Berenger. So, Jim, nice transition from basketball right into hockey. Good morning, and are you ready for the conference finals, which I don't think too many people had these four teams in it heading into 2022 or even heading into the postseason.
Yeah, I don't think so. Not too many people had these four teams. I think, you know, you look at the preseason favorites and the favorites before the Stanley Cup playoffs started, and Carolina's name was there. Vegas's name was there. Dallas, sure. I don't think anybody expected Florida to make it this far to the conference final, considering who they were playing in the first round and who they played in the second round. But we're here. These are the four teams, four non-traditional hockey markets. I think you can call Carolina a hockey market now. I think you can call Vegas a hockey market. Same with, I don't know about Dallas just yet, even though they've won a Stanley Cup and they've been to the conference final multiple times now. And, you know, looking for their fourth trip to a Stanley Cup final. But obviously we know Texas is all about football, especially Dallas. And it doesn't matter how well the Stars are doing. The Cowboys are still number one. But you know what? You got two great series here. And the Eastern Conference final starts Thursday night in Carolina.
I was going to say, and John will back me up on this, don't tell old school Whalers fans that Carolina is a hockey town. Just saying. That might be a little touchy subject. John, you agree?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So
yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, they're a tad bit bitter. And look, I don't blame them, not one bit. I know several of them that just have so much disdain for that Carolina Hurricanes. I'm mashing my sports together right now. Carolina Hurricanes logo, and certainly whenever they wear the throwback uniforms, that really draws ire. But yeah, I know, look, you brought up Florida, and we've kind of talked about this, and it's like, okay, is it surprising they are where they are? Absolutely, because if anything, no one expected them to get past the Bruins in the first round. I didn't, clearly, but I was wrong. But this is a team that won the President's Trophy last year. They were the best team in the Eastern Conference, got bounced in the first round. What's different between last year's Florida Panthers, who did have those expectations of going on a long playoff run, and this year's, who needed essentially almost a perfect record down the stretch just to get in?
Yeah, so a couple things. So obviously they looked at their loss to Tampa last year.
in the second round. And obviously they had issues in the first round against Washington where they could have been bounced. And they looked at their makeup and they're like, okay, well, we don't like it. They looked at their coach, Andrew Brunette, gets let go. And obviously Brunette took over for Joel Quenneville, and we know that situation. But they add Matthew Tkachuk. This guy, you know, they make a hard hockey decision. Yeah, they get rid of Huberto, 100-point guy, Uyghur, great defenseman. But you bring in a guy that's, you know, heart, like a heart and soul guy, a guy that's gritty, grinds, he can score, puts the team on his back. It makes guys better, like Anthony Duclair, like Sam Bennett. Nick Cousins is there, but their defense is good. Brandon Montour, Gustav Forsling, and Aaron Ekblad, who's healthy finally. And he's playing great minutes for them as well. And then, obviously, you know, you have a guy like Alexander Barkov there. And they had to be perfect down the stretch. And they were a minute away from being 8 points out of the wild card spot in Toronto when Paul Maurice went off, when Matthew's dad, Walt Keith Tkachuk, goes off on the team calling them soft. And they went on a run. And give credit to Paul Maurice coming in there and setting the tone, because he's like, look, it's all well and good. You guys want to get to the playoffs, but you don't know how to play in the playoffs. And he's brought that culture there. And then he makes the switch. He's like, all right, Alex Lyon got us so far. We have to go to Sergei Bobrovsky, $10 million man. And he stepped up for this team. He's in the zone. He's carrying the workload. As I discussed with Russ yesterday on the podcast, you know, this guy just needs all the work. And he's one of the best goalies in the world, two-time Vezina Trophy winner for a reason. And look what he's doing. Now, to me, the only thing for Florida is the time off going to hurt them, because they've had so much momentum and played so much down the stretch that, you know, Carolina, very tough building to play in. They play such a structured game. They're going to have to be more patient now, the Panthers are, and because Carolina can capitalize on your turnovers. And this is they're playing a similar team that they played in Tampa last year. So let's see if they've learned from their mistakes.
And look, I mean, I hate to relive this because it just puts a pit in my stomach, but they were about 55 seconds away from getting eliminated in the first round. And to your point, it kind of speaks to the resilience of this team and that kind of never quit attitude. But if there's one team that's not going to give you those opportunities like the Bruins did, and trust me, I didn't think the Bruins could be that team to give you those opportunities, it's Carolina. And the interesting dynamic here, and it's been talked about, obviously, is you know, way back in the day, 21 years ago, it's 2023, not 2022, you had, obviously, Rod Brind'Amour in the Stanley Cup Final with his coach, Mr. Paul Maurice. So now you have two guys going at it. So who do you think, Paul Maurice, obviously, many, many wins, the most losses. So there's an interesting dynamic when it comes to Paul. I mean, look, the guy's been in the league forever. He's been coaching forever. He still looks like he's the same age as he was 20 years ago. Who do you think has the advantage in this? Is it Rod the Bud or is it Paul Maurice?
I think it's Rod the Bud, to be honest. I like Carolina's team. And you make up a great point. Like, you said this earlier about how, like, Hartford Whalers fans don't like it. Well, let me tell you something. All of a sudden, these Carolina Hurricanes fans down there embraced this Hartford Whalers stuff when they wanted no part of it in 1997 and early on when this team moved down there. They're like, we don't recognize the Hartford Whalers and all that stuff. But Carolina has an edge because Rod Brind'Amour's got this team playing structured hockey as a hockey club. You know, Brent Burns, you got Spash and Aho. They just play a great game and they know how to bounce back from losses and they know how to play great. And, you know, obviously Rod the Bod could still probably play if he wanted to, but he's just a great hockey mind. And nothing against Paul Maurice. I think he's done a great job because this was the only job. Like when Bill Zito, you know, offered him the job, you know, there were other jobs for him to take, but this is the one he wanted. But I just like the way Carolina plays. I saw firsthand against New Jersey. I saw what they did against the Islanders. They can play a patient game. They don't care if the game goes in overtime, it drags, it slows. They're going to take their opportunities when it's there, and they're going to play great defense, and Frederik Andersen's going to shut the door, and he's played well. And again, obviously, Bobrovsky's got the edge in goal, but you know what? Carolina didn't have an edge in goal against the Islanders, and they figured it out. So I think structured hockey and good defense always wins. And again, for me, is Florida going to be patient enough against a team that doesn't make many mistakes?
And that's the thing too. It's like, we talked about this on the Full Press Hockey Weekly show, I think we both believe this is going to be a low-scoring series. I mean,
I agree.
Everything about it is set up. You have structured defense on Carolina's behalf. I mean, I think that's gonna be the biggest factor and ultimately what's gonna control this series, because it's gonna take away whether it's a slow start from Florida because of the time off, or just the combination of that and just the defensive structure of this Carolina team. I think offense is gonna be at a premium. We're gonna see a few 2-1 games. I think maybe a 3-1 game, empty netter type thing. You know what I mean? Like something very, very early, throwing it back to early 2000s, late 90s type hockey, you know. On the flip side, in the West, I think it's going to be a very high scoring series. I mean, Joe Pavelski had 8 goals in the conference semifinals. 8 goals. How?
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously we know how. He missed the first round against.
Yeah.
He missed the first round against Minnesota.
He had to make up some time, apparently. Yeah.
Yeah, it also helps you have a 4-goal game in the first game you're back. And he does it every different way. Shooting, tipping pucks. He's the master of the tipping. Dallas is a great offense. Very structured as well with Pete DeBoer. Again, look what Pete DeBoer does. Coaching a team in his first year. He takes them on a run. Now he goes up against his former club. Again, another storyline against Vegas. Bruce Cassidy, what he's done there with Vegas, back-to-back 50-win seasons. Again, the goaltending edge, it's got to go to Dallas. Though Ottinger hasn't played lights out like he has played, he shut the door in Game 7 against Seattle because Seattle lit him up. Aiden Hill's getting the start for Vegas. Obviously, you're going to lean Ottinger in Dallas, but Vegas has the edge starting at home. They have a very good structured team, very good defensive team. I think Carolina and Vegas have the two best defense cores left. In total defense cores, I'm not saying like best players. I think Dallas has the best defenseman left in the playoffs, and Miro Heiskanen, because he just drives so much offense for them. But Roope Hintz, Dallas needs, like with Florida with Barkov, Dallas needs Jason Robertson to get going. He hasn't had goals in 8 straight games. Yeah, you have 12 points, 10 assists, big deal. You need more from him in that top line. We know what Pavelski's doing. We know what Hintz is doing. Jamie Benn's turned back the clock. So is Tyler Seguin. But on Vegas' side, the original Golden Misfits are starting to get going. We know what Jack Eichel's done. Mark Stone, you know, the list goes on. It's just one of these great contrasting styles. And again, how much can they protect Aiden Hill, because Dallas has good offense?
Yeah, and that's the fascinating thing about this, because I think we're getting two opposite styles of series, which is going to lead to a fascinating Stanley Cup final, no matter who pairs up. You have one side, I think, is obviously a more offensive-minded series in the West, and in the East, obviously, more defense. So you're going to see that clash, obviously, in the Stanley Cup final at one point, but I gotta like Vegas in the West. I don't know what it is. It's just, you know, maybe it's my I have a soft spot for you know, that area.
Well, we know where we want to go.
Well, of course, you know, that's exactly it. But you know, at the same time, I just like their balanced, maybe.
Yeah, very balanced.
Yeah, like
very balanced.
Yeah, and I think ultimately that's what's gonna pan out. I think they're just gonna get the most. And look, I like Bruce Cassidy. I like Peter DeBoer. I just think Vegas is more balanced, and I think you're gonna see that play out over maybe 6 games.
Well, it's funny because every series that Vegas has been in, outside maybe Winnipeg, but even there were a lot of people that said Winnipeg could have a chance to pull the upset, even though Vegas is a 111 point team. I think they were most underappreciated and under the radar divisional champ that was in the playoffs, because we didn't know what we're going to get considering what we saw last year with this team. And you know, Jack Eichel's shown he's ready for the spotlight, and I agree, as much as everybody's picking Dallas, a lot of people are still picking Dallas because they think they have a complete team and they have the goaltender. Well, Vegas has just a complete team as well.
Yeah,
and they could score on a power play, and they could score at home, and they know how to win on the road as well. Yeah, Dallas has a great home record, 5-2, but they only have 3 home games in this series. And Vegas has shown they can take the first one on the road, as they did against Edmonton, as they did against Winnipeg, and they took both against Winnipeg, and they won 2 in Edmonton. So Vegas is a very complete team, and I don't think a lot of people are appreciating how good this team is. And I think this team is better than the team that went to the Stanley Cup final in the inaugural year.
Yeah, no, I definitely can't disagree with that. So before we let you go, though, Jim, there is one other bit of hockey news that kind of came down the pipe yesterday, and that is Tempe, Arizona, rejecting the Coyotes, basically, arena proposal, which, relative to what we see, and certainly relative to what we're seeing with the Oakland A's and Las Vegas, it wasn't a bad deal for that city, and you're pretty much now have a team that is in limbo. Where do they go from here?
Well, they're going to do as much as they want to keep the team in Arizona. I mean, obviously they have two options still in Arizona: get back with the Phoenix Suns owner if he wants them in the building, and they're going to try to redo America West Arena, the old building that they played in during the golden era of Coyotes hockey, if you want to call it that, with JR and Keith Tkachuk in the late 90s when they moved from Winnipeg. And you know, that those are options there. And then the other option is, and it's finally on the table, as much as the NHL doesn't want to admit it, and they finally did, even though they will play next year in the College Arena, relocation is on the table finally for the Arizona Coyotes. And look, Houston obviously is the spot. Everybody thinks Houston. If you can get an owner that wants to pay the rent to the Houston Rockets owner, it's pretty much set up for them to go to Houston. I don't – Quebec City, no. Atlanta, no. Kansas City might be the only other team, but take Salt Lake City out because it's not a great TV market. And then you're gonna compete with Vegas, because Vegas just has this new TV deal that they had that reaches a bunch of states now, and they get free games everywhere, and Salt Lake's one of that market. So, you know, the Coyotes, they're going to try to do their best, and you have to applaud the NHL for doing their best to keep teams there. But I think the end is coming to is near for the Coyotes in Arizona.
Yeah, and certainly yesterday's vote was a just a terrible blow for what they're doing. And, you know, you have guys that are Clayton Keller. I think his father said something on Twitter about, you know, some of these guys may not even show up, you know, at the start of the season. So, I mean, I don't know how dedicated.
It's May. It's
yeah,
May. Like,
yeah,
we'll talk to me in September when these guys aren't showing up.
And not getting a paycheck. I mean, exactly. That's the thing. But
it does stink. It does stink for the players. It does stink for the fan base, that's been there loyal. But you have to realize you're putting an arena in a retirement area. Mm-hmm. Tempe is very it's a retirement area, similar to if the NHL had done this right years ago with the Coyotes and tried to redo America West Arena and do downtown, the Coyotes would have been Tampa West.
Yeah.
It would have been. Players would want to go. You have the golf, the nice weather, all this stuff. But the problem is, as much as the NHL said it wasn't going to cost taxpayers money, that doesn't matter. If they believe it's going to cost money to their bottom line, they're not going to vote for it. I think if it was just the arena,
it passes,
but everything else had to pass as well for everything to go through. I think you do one piece at a time, then maybe it goes through.
Well, it's going to be a fascinating story to follow as the rest of the offseason continues, and we wonder where the Coyotes will play next. So, all right. Go ahead.
The never-ending story, that is,
yeah.
The Arizona Coyotes.
pretty much. Yeah. But at least we get to see them in a college stadium for at least one more season. So
absolutely.
All right, that's going to do it for us here on FPC Radio Live. Thank you, Jim, for joining us to talk hockey. We enjoy doing this. Thank you, John, for hanging tight there while we talk hockey and he watches highlights of LeBron James on his phone. And thank you all to the listeners for tuning in and hearing us rant and rave about things that whatever comes across our mind. So we will be back tomorrow to wrap up the week and, of course, talk about the NBA playoffs, the Stanley Cup playoffs, and whatever NFL news may or may not come down the pipe. So thank you, everyone, and we will talk to you then.